with support from the Climate Kick Alumni Association. Welcome to The Elephant.
For the very first time in the history of Homo sapiens, we are asking people of different cultures in different continents to agree.
Climate change is a fact.
All the evidence suggests climate change is to
blame. The coastline of South Florida is going to be pushed considerably inland.
To make food, our politics.
Extreme events will be the new normal.
About
climate change.
Climate change.
Climate change.
Climate change is to blame.
No one is addressing it.
Time for talking is gone.
So we need
it is the elephant in the room that we don't want to talk about.
Hello, I'm Kevin Caners, and welcome to The Elephant. This week on The Elephant, we're doing something a bit different. We're bringing you a special live interview. Last week, we were at a Climate Kick event in Birmingham, England, called the Innovation Festival. And while we were there, we talked to renowned glaciologist Martin Siegert in front of a live audience. Now, Martin Siegert is the co-director of the Grantham Institute for Climate Change at Imperial College in London. But the reason we were interested in talking to Professor Siegert was because of his work on glaciology. He's devoted his career to researching and studying ice and seeking to understand the way it behaves. And he's put a particular focus on Antarctica, a place that's been drawing increasing attention from climate scientists. Antarctica's ice sheet is upwards of 3 to 4 kilometers thick in parts, which is so much ice that if it was to melt completely, it would mean dozens of meters in sea level rise. In other words, it's important that we get a handle on how the frozen continent is changing. Martin Siegert has visited Antarctica now 3 times. His most recent trip, in 2012, was for an ambitious research expedition to explore a gigantic subglacial lake called Lake Ellsworth, one of upwards of 400 lakes that are buried beneath the ice sheet, and which have been sealed off from the rest of the world for potentially millions of years. During our interview, we spoke about the ways in which scientists study Antarctica, how the ice sheet is changing, and why it matters even for those of us living far away from the poles. Without further ado, let's head to Birmingham for my interview with Martin Siegert. Okay, and thanks so much for everyone coming out. So just a quick introduction. Professor Martin Siegert is the co-director of the Grantham Institute at Imperial College London, a world-renowned center for climate change and the environment, which brings together diverse expertise on economics, finance, geography, the environment, and politics. Previously, he was at Bristol University, where he was director of the Glaciology Center, and before that, he was head of the School of Geosciences at Edinburgh University. In 2013, he was awarded the Martha T. Mews Prize for Excellence in Antarctic Science and Policy, and I'm very happy to have Professor Martin Siegert here with us today. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Yeah.
So I maybe just wanted to start by asking you, how did you get involved with glaciology? How did this interest develop?
Yeah, well, many scientists that you might speak to will have a good story to tell about how they got involved in specific areas of science. I don't really. So my background is pretty normal, like many people. At school, I was interested vaguely in the planet that was around me. It's the 1970s and 80s, right? So it was a different time to now. I was interested in the planet around me. I was brought up in a little town 40 miles north of London. It was, I guess, pretty sleepy, nice, cozy existence. And I had no ambition at all to get into science. None of my family had ever been to university. I had no expectation about what I would do in my career at all. I was simply sort of chugging along, going year to year in my school days. Pretty good at maths, good at physics, like geography. That was it. And then it came to university, and I had really no idea. I mean, at that stage, if someone was going to ask me, what do you think you're going to do as a career, I'd probably say something like, be an accountant, because that's pretty much what I knew about.
Yeah.
You know, the people I know were...
If you're good at maths.
Yeah, 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 right, good at numbers, so to do that. And I was advised maybe you want to take a course in geography or something like that. And I suddenly started thinking about geology as a course, and read some information in prospectuses, university prospectuses, about that. Knew nothing about geology, was never taught about that at all. Reasonably interested in rock formations that I'd observed on holidays and things, but never really gone into any detail. And as part of that learning took place, I discovered the subject of geophysics. Now, geophysics is another very enabling subject. And to do it, you need maths and physics as a background. And in the area that I work in climate science now, when you talk to other climate scientists, they're all geophysicists, one way or another. Anyway, so I did that, and I got a reasonably good degree. I enjoyed my time. But then I took some time out from my degree. And I decided to do that. But I needed a job. You can't, you know, taking time out. You can do some things when you take time out. Go around the world or something. Well, I didn't do that. I ended up for a year working in road construction as a labourer.
As exciting as world travel.
Yeah, you're right. I tell you what, after you've done it for a little while, you do appreciate having an office job or something like that, because it was quite strange. My hands aren't suited to manual labour, right? People I was working with were commenting on my hands not looking like theirs, and their hands didn't actually look like hands anymore. So I didn't want my hands to look like this. I had to wear gloves, using a lot of concrete, and it's quite a caustic substance, and I was wearing gloves all the time. That's quite a lot of Mickey taking about that. And I did that for a year. I was really pleased to do it. It was hard work. It's being outside in all conditions. People are getting paid on how much work they do. They're not salaried. And it's a side of life I had no idea about. And I'm really grateful for having done that for a year. And every time I go back to the road that I constructed, a little road in Suffolk, and every time I see some roadworks, you don't have to go far out of this conference venue to see roadworks in the centre of Birmingham right now. For me, it's very interesting, because although things have changed a lot, right, in climate science and the world around us, road construction hasn't changed much at all, right? So it's very familiar to me.
And so was glaciology your escape from road construction?
Yeah, because I knew I wanted to do something else, and I didn't know whether that was a job or anything, but I was pretty open-minded, and I was sort of hedging my bets in lots of different applications, and I was getting a few job offers here and there. It wasn't quite right for me. And then I was reading in The New Scientist or Nature or something like that, an advert for a PhD in glaciology. And I hadn't done no glaciology at all, none. I hadn't studied ice in my degree, hadn't studied the ice age in my degree, and this particular PhD was for someone to know about glaciology and work out what the ice sheet in Europe was like at the ice age. But the skills that were needed were geophysics, maths, and physics, and that's what I had. So I didn't have any knowledge about the topic, but I had all the skills that were needed. And like several things that I've done before then and since, and I think it's advice that I would give anybody, sometimes you just have to take a chance and go for it and see if it works out and be open-minded about things. And if it doesn't work out, then chalk that up as experience. And so I did that, and here I am. Some years later, it was a great thing. And I just, glaciology was clearly a discipline that I was well-suited to. I just never knew it.
And who knew that it would be changing as much as and vital as it is today?
Well, very good point. I mean, so whenever you hear about climate change on the TV, the first image you'll see is one of two images you'll see, a iceberg carving off the front of a glacier with a big splash of water, or a little polar bear standing on a sea ice floe, desperately clinging to the last bit before it all sinks. Yeah. So ice is everywhere. Ice gets into everybody's living room almost on a daily basis, certainly on a weekly basis when climate change news is put out there.
So, I mean, you just mentioned ice is such a central thing in our understanding about climate change. It's kind of the symbol of climate change. And I think we all understand why it matters, why it gets so much news. We hear about the melting alpine glaciers. We hear about the ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica as being a really serious risk because of rising sea level. But it was also interesting when I was preparing for the segment to learn that it was because of ice, because of glaciers, that we first started to understand that climate had been different in the past in the first place. Can you tell me a bit about those findings?
Well, we have to go back quite a way. So the middle of the 19th century, the world that was around us at that time was a remarkable thing, of course, and it was sort of the same type of landscape that we have right now, obviously. But people's explanations for the landscapes and the sediments and the geology and all those things were pretty much dictated by, in the Western Europe, that is, dictated by what was written in the Bible. So a lot of sediments, loose sediments that are deposited in upland mountain regions and all across other parts of various countries are, in geological maps, are referred to as drift. And drift is a term that is derived from the idea that when Noah's flooding happened in the Old Testament, sea level rose as a consequence, and lots of icebergs were drifting around various countries and depositing their sediment over land. So the fact that we've got sediment in lots of places was explained as a consequence of the biblical flooding. And in fact, it almost sort of was used to reinforce the idea that there is evidence for that particular event.
And if you're a Republican, maybe still
maybe
does.
Maybe it is. Maybe it may even be people in this audience who think that. But the important thing is that there were people at that time who were challenging orthodoxy, and there were the new scientists that were emerging, geologists that were coming out, thinking that actually these landscapes that we're seeing in front of us, in particular in the Swiss Alps and a person called Louis Agassiz, but also in Great Britain with William Buckland, we're looking at striations on rocks, so we're looking at classic upland geomorphological features like U-shaped valleys and all those sort of things, and then going to the Alps and seeing those landscapes actually being created and eroded right now by the action of glaciers, and then going back to the same landscapes in Scotland and other places and thinking, well, the only thing that's different between the Swiss Alps at the moment and these other places is there's no ice in these other places. And so there must have been ice in these formerly glaciated landscapes. And the fact that it's not here anymore means